What's going on, everyone? Jonah Cameron, John Ritchie. It is 94 WIP. Great to be with you off and rolling this Wednesday morning. Well, it's the pivot day of sorts from an Eagles standpoint. Obviously, the Saints game starts going a little bit more in the back burner. We start looking ahead, but also more than anything, perhaps, big picture with this football team. And a lot of focus today on the head coach who's been very scrutinized, and with good reason in recent days. We'll get to that. Phillies, a lot on the Phils, you know, clinching the division 2 days ago, a clunker last night. A classic Taiwan game. Look, we'll do it all with you on the phone lines. 215-592-9494. Rich.
Hello there, Joe.
Hello there, Johnny.
Studies show that more than two-thirds of couples tilt their head to the right when they kiss.
I'm surprised it's not more.
65%. 65% tilt their heads to the right. Well, actually, that would be slightly less than two-thirds.
Well, right, but about two-thirds. Yep. Yeah. Well, I would have thought it would have been higher than that, but okay. It's an interesting fact.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, it kind of makes you stop.
What determines that? Is it like what hand do you write with?
Well, it would be higher, right? It'd be like 90% if it were handedness.
That's why I'm surprised.
Yeah,
that's
because handedness is, as Devin, as a lefty, you should know, like, we are less than 5%. We are 3% or something.
We're unique.
Yeah.
So that's why relief pitchers have an advantage in baseball. If you can be a chunk ball lefty, just, you know. Bring it
That's
in.
Why my daughter is going to be the first female Major League Baseball player.
Oh, yeah. Exactly she can right. junk it up.
Oh, yeah.
James, work on that ethos, man.
James, if Taiwan Walker was a lefty, no.
My daughter might be a better pitcher today than Taiwan Walker is, all right?
No way.
All right. So, look, the Taiwan thing's on the table, 215-592-9494. So certainly is the Nick Sirianni thing. You know, let's get into it here today. By the way, we'll play some audio through the show. Sirianni with us yesterday on our program. So, obviously, he has been, I would say even more than the team, you know, like the team. Sirianni's been the main topic in the last, whatever the heck it's been, 60 hours or so since that Eagles-Saints game because of his decisions. And I want to get in today, this is really a everybody get on the record kind of day. This is one of those days. We're three games in to Nick Sirianni's fourth season. I don't know anybody that doesn't at least have a strong opinion. I know most. I mean, I sense most are anti-Sirianni. There are certainly some that are pro-Sirianni. I think there's a certain degree of confusion, but, I mean, everyone's got some form of conviction on this. I want to hear from you today at 215-592-9494 to get on the record with what we've got with Nick Sirianni as the head coach and basically answer this question. Nick Sirianni is what? As the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, Nick Sirianni is what? Good coach? Bad coach? Not here for long? Someone with a great resume? What is he? Talk to us. 215-592-9494. John, first crack at it, John. Sirianni is what, John Ritchie?
I struggle to believe in Nick Sirianni. Nick Sirianni is something less than what I had hoped to this point. Struggle to believe in him. I want our offensive coaches to be able to have an offensive conversation that Nick participates in and contributes in and dazzles other coaches in. You know, does it feel like that's who or what we got with our head guy? A guy who's going to dazzle those other coaches. I'm good with the fact that the organization wants to keep a certain amount of sleight of hand available for these things. Like, they certainly keep their options open.
Yes, they do.
It feels like the Eagles reserve the right to control this narrative, and I feel like Nick's probably aware that a major component of his job is just falling on his sword, and he's good at that. And his players and his coaches seem to love him for how selflessly he has fallen on his sword in the past. You know, Nick gave up play calling. The question is, did he really want to give up the play calling?
Yeah, we don't know.
He deserved to have to give up the play calling. How does that feel to you? Like, I feel like this is not of Nick's wishes. You know, like, to me, it doesn't feel like Nick's a confident up-and-comer who cuts this dashing, you know, demanding, commanding figure in front of his team who respects him and loves the hell out of him. To me, it's more like he bumbles a little bit. He knows a lot about football, but he can't always communicate it as well as I wish he could. That's my worry.
You know, let me just say this, Sean. I agree with a lot of what you said there. I actually think they like him a lot. I really do.
The team, I think they like him a lot. I think that the organization likes him a lot because he falls
but
on
I,
his sword.
But I mean the players.
Team because
I think they do.
Because he's nice. He's easy. They're practicing for 45 minutes in many cases. They're not hitting in many cases. So, yeah, I do think the team likes him. But I want Kellen Moore to be the main offensive mind who translates the plays, like the ideas, into plays. Who translates the plans into plays and then calls those plays in games. I don't want Nick Sirianni being a major part of that. Yesterday he told us that they, you know, discuss and that he's going to chime in and he's going to make those calls. I would prefer that Kellen Moore keeps it consistent. I would prefer that that is what the quarterback gets a feel for, that Kellen Moore's rhythm. You know, Kellen Moore, and I know they're saying everything's collaborative. Again, I know they're keeping their options open.
But what he said, but just to be clear, for those that missed it, what Sirianni said this week, and it was after the game on Sunday, is that there are times he's just going to overrule Kellen Moore. Now, I know some people don't believe that. I do believe that. But, I mean, he stated publicly that there are going to be times where he's just going to make the call in a game. And we wondered as recently as last week, is he even allowed to do that? He's saying he is allowed to do that, and he is doing it.
Yes, and he's doing it. And by the way, the relationship between Nick Sirianni and our quarterback is a whole other thing. Remember last year, we
don't
know what the heck happened with that, and we'll probably never know. That is an issue. That can be problematic. We lose a game, not problematic. We lose two games. Maybe sometimes in some quarters of Philadelphia, people will start to mutter. But, man, we lose for a month because Jalen or Saquon gets a high ankle sprain. Watch out. You know, this questions will arise. Will the quarterback start to question the authority of the head coach? I don't know. I worry about stuff like that. I worry that Nick could, we've seen him lose control at times on the sideline with fan bases. Yeah. You know, we've seen Big Dom have to pull him aside. We've heard stories about how that's, you know, that can get crazy. Nick's decision making in this last game, if you can trust, you know, what we gather, the intel that we gather, when he's making calls that feel like he's trying to take too big a bite, remember Carson Wentz trying to take too big a bite on third down.
I remember.
Stop pushing the ball downfield. Just take what's there. Jalen Hurts, stop breaking the pocket, trying to get. Just take the check down in the flat. It's there for you. Nick Sirianni, these calls, when you're chiming in, are you trying to, I don't know, compensate, overcompensate?
John, let me ask you a question.
That's my worry.
Let me ask you a question. Do you believe in him as the Eagles head coach? Because ultimately, ladies and gentlemen, that's really what we're asking today. And I'm asking you at 215-592-9494. I'm asking you basically to go on the record and say whether you believe in the head coach. John, do you believe in him?
No, not as a head coach. Not as our head coach. I believe if there are 32 head coaches in the world that are the best at this job, I would like to think that there's someone who can do it better than Nick Sirianni.
So it's a fascinating thing because I know, you know, John, I know I hear the pain in your answer there because you want to believe in the head coach of the Eagles.
I do.
You know, we have seen him have success. You know, he's the kind of guy that's, while irritating in some ways with the theatrics sometimes, he's a good dude. Like, there's no doubt he's a good guy, so you want to root for him. And I think he's got a rootable component from that standpoint. But also, it's like, man, the theatrics sometimes get really irritating. Let me just tell you where I'm at with the head coach. And again, everyone can weigh in, 215-592-9494. I mean, obviously, it's a truism and a basic fact to say he's a coach whose job is on the line. We know that. That's clear. I do think he's a better coach than most people think. I really do. I think there's a lot of people out there. This is just my perception talking to friends, but primarily just here on WIP talking to, you know, thousands of callers in the midst of a season. I think a lot of people just think he's a joke, and I don't think he's a joke. I mean, Elliot has said, and I think it's good that Elliot's been pounding this pavement on this one, like the Eagles got a win the other day that they were an underdog on the road in a tough spot. Now, we don't really know how good New Orleans is. You know, time will tell whether they were a phony baloney 2-0 or like they're legitimately headed to 11-12 wins. We'll see. But it was a good win to get And it was a win in the midst of a lot of adversity that a lot of people did not think they would get. So I do think he gets unfairly maligned where he doesn't get credit when he deserves credit. I really do believe that. So I think he's better than most people think. I know he's got a really good-looking resume, but I also know that's propped up by what I would refer to as two massive advantages in the first 3 years of his existence as the head coach. First off, in the first 2 years, he had an all-time easy schedule. Just all-timer. I mean, he takes over a team. When they got on a run in 2021 and ended up finishing 9-8, you know, that second half of the season, I mean, it was a joke. It was a complete joke with that schedule. And then in 2022, it was basically the same schedule again, but this is where advantage number two came in. An unbelievable roster. Like an unbelievable roster. Unbelievable. So I look at his resume, which says in basic clear terms, 3 years, three playoffs, and a Super Bowl berth, and I say, yeah, the resume's great, but I do feel there were advantages built in that, you know, you kind of have to grade him on a curve as a result of that. Look, I feel like we know he's not as good with play design as we'd like, and that's a problem. I also think he's not as much CEO coach as I thought as recently as a week ago, and that also might be a problem. Am I in or out on Sirianni? I will tell you this. It's not the easiest question for me to answer, but I lean out. Now, the good news is you're going to find out one way or the other by the end of the year. The bad news is you might waste a season where you got this incredible offensive talent. You don't want to see a season wasted. But if I were to tell you right now, in or out on Sirianni, for me, I'd be out. But I'm qualifying it by saying this. I'm not 2 feet out. I'm 1 foot out. There are people that are so far out. It's like when Daniel LaRusso got driven off the map by Johnny Lawrence before he came back and saved the day with the crane kick that was illegal, by the way. But, like, driven off the mat. I'm not off the map. We're mats on Sirianni. I think there are a lot of people, frankly, that treat him very unfair, that think he's a joke. And, I mean, I find it really hard to believe you can have a record this good through 3 seasons and 3 games and be a joke. But a lot of people think he is. But if I'm really bringing it right home, I'm telling you, I'm certainly more out than in. But time will tell, ultimately, what the Eagles will be at the end of this year.
Boy, I'm looking at something on our board here. It's one of the odder occurrences I've ever seen. So you can still join. You know, we got some phone lines open.
I see what you're talking about.
We got two different mics in Douglasville calling.
Yeah, we do.
Now, that's not the same guy that's like, I'm calling from the home phone. I'm calling from the cell phone. It's going to optimize my chance to get on quick. He's not pulling one of them, James.
No,
right?
It'd be weird because one wants to talk Phillies, one wants to talk Eagles.
Oh.
So that'd be really
okay,
weird,
that
huh?
Would be weird.
He wants to get in both sides.
Hey, you know what I want to talk?
Do you think they know each other?
Great question.
That is a good question.
They're in Douglasville.
Both mics.
It's
how
possible.
Big is Douglasville?
It's possible.
It's a great question.
It's possible these guys were classmates.
They could even be brothers if they were George Foreman.
Mike Jr. and Mike Sr. and Mike Jr. could be father and son. How about that?
It could be.
I can't wait to find out more about the Mike.
By the way, what is up with George Foreman naming 5 different kids George?
I think it's such a wild mistake.
I actually didn't know that until just now, so
yeah.
Thank you.
Five Georges. Five George.
It's wrong is what it is.
It is. It's terrible.
You
know? All right, let me tell you what's not terrible.
Those kids don't feel valued properly.
I would agree.
Like, give me an independent name.
Do you think he calls them like 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 right now?
Probably.
Like, hey, 3, get over it.
That makes sense.
But they're all going to inherit at least $100 million.
Yeah, it worked out for them.
Seltzer.
True.
Happy birthday to you, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Happy birthday. James Seltzer.
How about it?
How you feel?
Older.
Really?
All right.
Do you really?
Well, I mean, you know, not necessarily older than yesterday, but I feel it.
You're getting up there a little bit.
43, man. Yeah.
I mean, dude, if it was colonial times, you'd be more than two-thirds
away to death. I'd be way close to death.
You'd be dead. You might be dead if you were colonial.
I probably would be, actually. Yeah. I'm very bad with spatial awareness. I would probably, like, get some cut
and it would get infected.
I would fall off a cliff, something like that. Yeah.
I do think about that a lot for myself, my own purposes. I would be an invalid if we were in colonial times. Blind, I'd be just sitting like somewhere in a corner, useless.
Well, I get it, man.
Well, this is a positive way to say happy birthday.
and then there's,
luckily, it's not colonial time, so we're all good.
You'd be dead.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
good thing you're not dead.
And then there's this question. Do you believe in Nick Sirianni? Let's go to the phones. 215-592-9494. The aforementioned, at least one of them, Mike in Douglasville. Hi, Mike.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Hi, Mike. Hey, do you know the other Mike?
Is your dad named Mike?
No, he is not. I do not know the other Mike in Douglasville.
Are you sure?
I will say this. Seltzer, first of all, happy birthday. Second of all, you got to change his name. There can't be two Mike and Douglas.
So for what it's worth, I did put in parentheses different Mike.
Yeah.
He did.
Because you are the original Mike and Douglasville, if that makes you feel a little
I got
better.
Your back, Mike. You'll be fine. All right, give me what you got on the Eagles situation.
Yeah, so this situation's so freaking confusing with me. You know, I came into the season as a Sirianni supporter. I was fine with him bringing him back and whatever, and what a role he had. But, like, if he wants to have the fourth down responsibility, go for it, don't go for it, that's fine. Let Kellen call the freaking play, though. I mean, for Sirianni, it is kind of on par with what we've seen with him over the past couple of years. You know, you go back to the Super Bowl year, we jumped on teams, especially in, like, the second quarter and stuff like that, where we would see him get a late touchdown, and then we'd get the ball back in the second half, and then we'd get another touchdown. So his mindset has not changed in any way while he has been the head coach of the Eagles. The problem is his effectiveness has failed. And you go back to the 2020.
Yeah, it is failing. Yep, that's right. Mike, let me tell you the situation that has been the most scrutinized the other day where I feel your point is totally on point. So I swear to God, I mean, right hand, like literally in the air right now, if the Eagles had been playing good offense, if they had 17 points on the board when they went for fourth and one, if they had 20 points on the board, if it was the 2022 Eagles, I'd say go for fourth and one. One, you're going to get it. Two, you're going to call timeout with about 10 seconds to go. You're going to have one or two shots in the end zone. I trust my quarterback. I trust my playmakers. Go try to get seven. If you don't get it in one or two plays, you kick a field goal, bing, bam, boom, you still get the three. The problem the other day, he didn't feel the game. They didn't have A.J. Brown. Jalen wasn't playing well. They had a goose egg. It wasn't the 2022 Eagles. I thought he really messed up. It's because, and here's the thing, an analytics chart might not tell you that. The analytics chart might just tell you if you're down 3-0, go for it. But that's not the story. The story was they were struggling to move the ball.
100%. And, I mean, forget the fact that we didn't even have A.J. Brown. The analytics don't even tell you. You lost two offensive linemen, to block up that right side of the line.
That's right.
So, I mean, there is a certain feel for the game. And, I mean, like I said, back in 22, we were one of the healthiest teams in the league. So going into this game, dropping, as many people as we did, the analytics got to change when you start factoring in.
All right, Mike, excellent.
He just isn't feeling it.
Excellent phone call to start, man. By the way, AMA today at 7 o'clock, you ask, we answer. Questions from Facebook, Twitter, and the text line. Three ways you can get involved with questions. Make them some good, fun, creative questions. We'll answer them coming up at 7 today. We'll address the Philly situation coming up in 1 minute. The Phils and last night, that whole deal in 1 minute.
Hey, Philly, if it's been a minute since you've considered a Nissan, now's the time to check out my friends at the Busch Auto Group. With six new Nissan models under $30,000 and two locations in Limerick and Exton, quality and affordability are right around the corner. This month, save up to $10,000 on select Nissan models. Visit them in-store at Exton Nissan and Nissan 422 of Limerick or online at BushAutoGroup.com. That's B-U-S-H AutoGroup.com. Philly rides with us.
All right, Cheddar Cameron, John Richie. So let's address the Phillies and put them on the table. Also, you can weigh in on at 215-592-9494. So let me tell you, the Phillies game was the result I pretty much expected yesterday morning, but it was a different way to get there.
Exactly. It wasn't a hangover game.
It wasn't a hangover game. They fielded their team. I mean, JT didn't play. Garrett Stubbs played, but they fielded their team. But they didn't lose because of a hangover. They lost because of Taijuan Walker.
How frustrating is that, too?
That's
but
why they
expect
lost.
Because it's a normal lineup. That showed that those guys went. They didn't
two
drink hard.
Two guys hit a home run.
Yep. They did
Bryce
it.
How about getting 30?
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
But they had no chance.
And here's the thing. The Phils do dodge a bullet later in the night because the Brewers won, but that's not going to matter. The Phils are going to get the bye. They can actually clinch it today. But the Dodgers lost and the Yankees lost.
On a game-ending triple play.
Yeah, I know.
Also, just the National League in general
is wild right now.
It is wild.
I mean, the Braves beat the Mets last night. The Diamondbacks lost. The Padres are a game and a half back of the Dodgers. Yeah. Like, it's all crazy
so
right
that
now.
Stuff is interesting. But to me, the thing obviously we care the most about, are they going to get home field advantage? And last night was a step in the wrong direction, even though those other two teams lost, because the clock is ticking.
There's only four games left for the Phils. And I got to tell you guys, like, it's a weird thing with Dave Dombrowski because we celebrate the great stuff he's done, and he's done much more great than bad. But his decision to not have anybody else holstered to be a fifth starter is potentially disastrous. I mean, if they lose Game 7 of the NLCS in Dodger Stadium because they've lost 97 straight times that Taiwan Walker is start, that's going to be the thing.
11 of 13 in games in which he's made an appearance.
They get smoked.
I was
They're not even close in these games.
To me, it was disrespectful on a million different levels to every fan who bought a ticket, but to the lineup that got put out there.
I know.
I mean, that was unbelievable.
He's the worst I remember, just visually. Eye test-wise, the worst I remember.
Devin, you were there. How frustrated were the fans in the stands?
Oh, so as soon as he came out, actually, even maybe when he was warming up in the bullpen, you could hear boos scattered throughout. When he was walking out, boos were raining down. Because why would you bring in Taiwan Walker with bases loaded? That's the thing. The bases were already loaded, and then he walks someone home.
He walked two guys in a row.
I don't want to say I feel bad for him because he stinks out loud, but like the crowd was letting him hear it. Hopefully it's the last time we try this fifth starter thing. It was not good.
It was not good.
And I agree, it wasn't fair to the fans who were there. They should boo.
It's astounding to have someone this bad on a team this good. I mean, it's really unbelievable. 215-592-9494. By the way, Dombrowski on our show, when is it, James? 9:30 on Friday?
Friday at 9:30, yep.
Look.
Got to ask him about it.
We're going to have a lot more praise than criticism, obviously. But, I mean, we're going to have to tackle that topic with him. I mean, it's like, how in the world is this your fifth starter situation where you basically don't have one? 215-592-9494. Coming up, how you can win Kevin Hart tickets, your reaction on the Phils from last night, obviously the big picture also as they get close to the tickets. You know, it'd be wild if the Braves and Mets don't get these games in and then have to, like, reconvene on Monday.
After the season.
I mean, that could happen. I mean,
pitching matchups, it's insane.
And then they'd play, like, a Monday, and then the winner would play on a Tuesday.
Because
they're
supposed to get 5 inches of rain tomorrow.
Yeah. But the one thing I'll say, James, baseball players are used to playing in one city on one day and another
city.
For sure.
Rhea's point about the pitching matchups is really the biggest issue. Yeah. I mean, Huge. They might have to start the round with their second or third starter.
All right, let's give you two different Twitter poll questions of the day. They're both brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. It's tailgate season at Armin Chevy. Check the incredible lineup of SUVs at ArminChevy.com. Together, let's drive. First poll question, as we've been discussing in the show, do you believe in Nick Sirianni as the Eagles head coach? Yes or no? Do you believe in him? Yes or no? Second poll question. Phillies, obviously, the other day, reincorporated, if you will, Dancing on My Own in a small way in the clubhouse in the celebration. We'll ask you, do you like that the Phillies are still incorporating Dancing on My Own in their clubhouse celebrations? A, yes. B, no. You can vote at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. By the way, it was really sad to see yesterday the news about Brett Favre with the Parkinson's diagnosis. That's a terrible, terrible disease, and you know, it's not something you want to see on anyone. So that was very, very unfortunate. All right. Shield Kapadia joins us shortly. Also today, you can win, and this is a great prize, Kevin Hart tickets. A pair of tickets to see Kevin Hart's Acting My Age tour at the Met Philadelphia on December 6th. Tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster.com. That's Ticketmaster.com to purchase the tickets. But you can also just win them here today. And here's how. So The Princess Bride came out, obviously, in the 1980s. Tremendous movie. Came out on this date, believe it or not, now close to 40 years ago. Princess, the whole deal. All right, here's what we're looking for today. From the world of fiction, the best and or most notable fictional character ever that is a royal. Got to be a royal of some sort. Maybe you get a little creative, some play on words here. But through the span of time with movies, shows, books, there have been a lot of royals featured. We're looking for a great royal, a notable royal, character. Richie, start us off. What do you got for an answer? Best answer ever provides it wins the Kevin Hart tickets.
King Friday the 13th, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
King Friday, he was so tiny.
Huge.
He was so small, but he carried himself with such dignity.
He did.
He really did.
He was a forceful
small
character.
But mighty.
He was. Seltzer, give me an answer.
Royal. So I want to see where this goes. I'm going to take one that I'm guessing no one in this room has heard of. Shout out to my fish heads out there. Wilson, King of Prussia.
You know, your ability to name something that nobody knows about
or cares
about.
It's a fish song. I just said, you guys don't know it. It's a fish character from a fish song. Shout out to Wilson.
Fair
Shout
enough.
Out to fish.
All right.
Someone out there enjoyed that
answer. I'm sure. Less than 1%. Devin, give me an answer on a royal.
Princess Amelia Thermopolis Rinaldi, Princess of Genovia from The Princess Diaries.
You got it. Big answers are going to be out there. Ree, what do you got?
King Julian. It's a cartoon character. He's king of the lemurs.
All right. Look, I'm going to refrain because I want to leave some of the big ones available for people. But give us a great answer for a notable royal, a king, a queen, a prince, a princess, whatever it might be. Best answer, it could be the queen consort. Is that the term?
Queen consort is what Camilla was supposed to be.
Gotcha.
But there were some backdoor things, gotcha. And then she's queen.
Could be a queen mother. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of ways to go here, but give us, from the world of fiction, a royal character of some sort. Best answer, whoever provides it, wins the Kevin Hart tickets. We'll talk to Sheil Kapadia coming up here in a moment. 215-592-9494. In the meantime, let's go to Sheil right now because the Eagles played a game. You know, one of the things we love about having Sheil on the show on Wednesdays, by the time we've talked to him, by the time we get to him, he has digested the game film. And so we really get the scoop of what really happened out there on the football field. Sheil joins us every Wednesday at this time. Of course, does fantastic work for The Ringer. Good morning, Sheil.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Doing well, Sheil.
Quite a bit. So, Sheil, let's start with the game, then we'll broaden it out to the team moving forward. But game-wise, offense, you've had a chance to digest the film. What stood out to you the most on offense?
Yeah, I mean, the offense was an unsettled performance, I would say. You put up a lot of yards. They had a lot of explosive plays, but down to down. It was inconsistent in the passing game, and you still had the turnovers there with Jalen Hurts, although I think the interception was probably more on Devontae Smith than Jalen Hurts. I have no problem with Jalen Hurts making that throw, but he had the fumble there. So there are still times where you look at it where you say, all right, he doesn't look totally comfortable with what's being called. He could kind of turn it loose there, but instead he holds on to the football a little bit. So they did enough to win. Goddard made some big plays. Hurts made some big plays. Saquon obviously might have saved the season with that run. It felt like at the time anyway, but certainly still a lot to work on.
Sheil, is there anything about Jalen or the offense specifically that you've noticed that helps him settle into the games? Because in the three games they've played, two of them, he's played much better as the game went on. Do you notice anything that leads to that?
It's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. No, I haven't noticed anything. I think most quarterbacks, if you get them some easy completions early on, if you maybe dial up a play that they like, a chunk play early on that they like throughout the week, that they're comfortable with, that they've played, that they've used before, maybe some of those things. But no, it's something to look for going forward.
Sheil, in your experience around the NFL with staffs and coaches, how common is collaborative play calling? Where we heard yesterday when we were talking with Nick Sirianni that, you know, he pitches in, that they talk about it, that it's not just Kellen Moore that's calling the plays. Is this common? And is this or is this something that we should be concerned about?
Yeah, I think it all depends. Like there was a scenario last season where Kyle Shanahan, I think it was a playoff game, and it was like third down or something, and his defensive coordinator called a blitz, and he overruled his defensive coordinator on the headset and was like, we're not blitzing right now. That's way too high risk. However, in this situation, I mean, you have to look at everything in context, and they made changes to the offensive staff, the organization, Jeffrey Lurie, Howie Roseman. They decided Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio were going to come in, and if Nick Sirianni wanted to keep his job, that these were going to be his coordinators. And so I was under the impression that he was kind of handing the keys to these guys and that he wasn't going to be involved at all with them calling plays. So that's why it raises my antennae a little bit, and I think it's unusual for this specific situation, even if it's not unusual for every coaching staff around the NFL.
Sheil, Well, actually, let's do one Sirianni question, and we'll get back to the game. Do you believe in Nick Sirianni, Sheil?
I have a lot of questions about him right now. I mean,
that's more of a no than a yes.
Yeah, that's more of a no than a yes. I mean, the way these first three games have gone, and some of his game management and his in-game decision making, and what you guys just mentioned there, I don't know that this experiment, if you would have asked Jeffrey Lurie in the summer in the off season that, hey, it's going to go this way after three games. I don't, even though they're 2-1, I don't know that he would love that. So no, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not a big believer in kind of how this is working right now.
Sheil, let's get to some very important pieces that were out the other day, and the Eagles got a win with a bunch of backups on offense. How did those backups look? I'm sure there's a good chance a bunch of them are going to have to play coming up on Sunday again. Who played well? Who didn't of the random backups?
Yeah, I thought Tyler Steen did a nice job at right guard, and it's been just sort of a strange career for him as an Eagle so far, but I thought he came in and he did a nice job there replacing Mekhi Becton. Fred Johnson, you know, in the run game, I thought he did a good job in pass protection. There were some issues, but it's hard. I mean, you come in as a backup, and really you just don't want the game to be destroyed. You see some of these teams, their backup offensive linemen come in. The team the Eagles are playing this weekend, they've had issues. When their backup offensive linemen come in, they can't do anything. The offense can't function. So I give both those guys credit. It's a hard spot to come in and play. And even though I think, you know, Fred Johnson, it's not going to look like Lane Johnson, you know, they did enough to allow the offense to function.
How about the backup wide receivers? Because a bunch of them not only got run, but it's going to happen again. What'd you make of their performance?
Yeah, I mean, they just haven't gotten a lot of action. You know, Jahan Dotson did a nice job freeing up Dallas Goedert on that last play, but now it's like you guys are probably going to have to catch the football more. They're going to have to dial up plays for you. That hasn't really been the case. So they haven't gotten a big opportunity. Dotson's a guy who's had about 500, 600-yard seasons previously in his career. So he's done some things. It's not like he has never been a guy who's been targeted, but they haven't shown me that yet. I mean, they just haven't been a part of the offense, a part of the passing game.
Let's talk about the defensive side of things. Was it attitude that stopped the Saints, or was it scheme?
You know, it's actually an interesting backstory with the scheme, where if you remember that Rams-Patriots Super Bowl that was really ugly, I think it was 2018. In that Super Bowl, Bill Belichick implemented a scheme that Vic Fangio had used earlier in the season against that vaunted Los Angeles Rams offense. And Fangio in this game brought that scheme back out, where he's playing six guys at the line of scrimmage. And he's saying, no, you know, that stretch run that we talked about last week, you're not going to be able to use that against us in this game. And it worked beautifully. I mean, the Saints could not run the football. I think on early downs, they averaged under 3 yards per carry. So it was a little bit of both. Guys played hard. Guys played well. But I'll give Fangio a lot of credit, where he was throwing some changeups there at the Saints that they weren't ready for, and really completely shut down an offense that was playing well through the first 2 weeks of the season.
The difference in Jordan Davis's performance between the first couple weeks and last week, how profound was it?
You know, I would say a little bit. I don't know that I would go like overboard with it. I like using him on stunts, which they did early in the game to free him up for that sack. When you get the big man moving a little bit and he doesn't have to worry about beating a guy one-on-one, I thought that worked really well, and I would like to see that more. And he did do a good job in the run game. There's no doubt about it. He's in the middle there. He was holding the point of the attack, and he was disruptive. So he did a nice job. But I don't know if you're going to ask me about him next or not, but oh, my gosh, Jalen Carter in this game. Like, this is film where you would look at it and say, this guy has a chance to be the best defensive tackle in the NFL. And wow. I know they had backups in there with the Saints, but I was writing note after note about how this guy was wrecking possession, wrecking play after play. That's the guy you need. If this is going to be a good defense, that's the version of Jalen Carter you need to show up consistently for the rest of the season.
So he's the reason. He's the attitude maker. He's the catalyst for the way that defense played, in your opinion?
I mean, there were plays where the Saints had guys open and Derek Carr was looking at him, and Jalen Carr just wrecked the play. Or Derek Carr had to get rid of the football a little bit earlier, or it was a high leverage run play and he's in the backfield before Alvin Kamara can do anything. I mean, he was everywhere in this game. Easily the best performance by an Eagles defensive player this season, and I don't think it's even close.
Wow, that's incredible, especially coming off week one, Zach Bond. That was, you know, 15 tackles and 2 sacks. That was quite the performance. Let's talk about a lesser performance. Bryce Huff, how was it? And is it possible that this guy could actually hold up against the run at some point this season?
I mean, you look at the play. So early on, it's a 3rd and 1. He gets pinched inside, and they get a run to the outside. He doesn't set the edge. It's an 8-yard run. After that play, I noticed he's replaced by Brandon Graham. All the other 10 starters are still on the field. He was the only one replaced after that. And so I look at that, and you look at Brandon Graham's play and Bryce Huff's play in this game, it's not even close. There's no coach in the NFL who would say, I'm going to play Bryce Huff over Brandon Graham. I mean, Bryce Huff was getting blocked one-on-one by tight ends and pass protection in this game. And then there's a play at the end of the game where they try to do that with Brandon Graham, and he drives the guy back into Derek Carr's lap within 2 seconds. And so, listen, I don't want to pile on the guy and crush him. I don't know if there's an injury or what's going on, but just what I see on the film, there's no way you can play Bryce Huff more than Brandon Graham in this defense right now. Maybe that'll change by Halloween or by Thanksgiving, and he'll get more comfortable. Right now, he is not giving them anything as a pass rusher. It's not just against the run. When he gets pass rush opportunities, he's giving them nothing. He doesn't have a single pressure through three games.
Wow.
Hey, Shield, last thing here, my man. Give us a Bucs scouting report. Eagles are a small favorite. They got smoked there last year in January. How good is Tampa?
Yeah, their offense, they've had offensive line injuries, and they can't block anyone. Baker Mayfield was sacked 7 times last week. He's been sacked, I think, 14% of the times he drops back. So this is another game where you need your defensive line to dominate and to get after him. Now, they do have talent at wide receiver, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. So if you get the pass rush you got the first 2 weeks of the season, he can dice you up a little bit and get hot. And then we know Todd Bowles has some the different things he does with the blitzes and forcing Jalen Hurts to roll to his left. We've seen that before. So the Eagles need answers to those things. And I'll tell you what, this is a fun measuring stick game. Mm-hmm. They're banged up, and you say, hey, it's Jalen Hurts and Kellen Moore, and you don't have a whole lot else. I mean, you have Saquon and Goddard, but you might be injured on the offensive line and at wide receiver. How good is this duo of quarterback and play caller? Can you still go down there and be efficient and come away with a win? I think we're going to learn a lot about those two guys specifically, potentially, in this game.
Look, if the Eagles can get to 3-1 through some really strong adversity in September, even though it might be an ugly way to get there, that'd be a good start record-wise. Shield, great work, bud. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Shield.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Shield.
You got it, my man. You got it. Let's talk to Tom in Abington right now. Back to the phones. Good morning, Tom.
Yo, gang. How are we doing this morning?
Super.
All right, all right. Well, I'm on my way to a funeral this morning. Rest in peace, Aunt Jean.
Well, condolences to you, Tom.
Yeah, so you bring up Nish Sirianni, and I feel the need to call in. Mm-hmm. Do I have any faith in him? No. So according to his answers in recent press conferences, we have, what, 18 coaches getting input during the game?
Seemed to be a lot, Tom.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate collaboration during the week. I get that. But in game, I need one guy locked in, dialed in, making calls.
Well,
so,
Tom, here's the fascinating thing. I'm sorry to cut you off, but let me just say this. Here's what you need in game. You need this. You need one guy to have the final call. Every team has one guy to have the final call. What I believe, based on what we've heard Sirianni say in the last 2 days, the guy that we thought had final call on offense doesn't.
Right. It's Nish.
There you go.
And that's a problem. He's going to cost us games down the road. And I hope he can rein this in, because he's trying to prove that he's the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles when we already know it. We know it, Nish. You don't have to prove it. You're working too
hard. Well, Tom, here's what would be fascinating to know. When Lurie and Howie had those private meetings with him in mid-January and stripped him of power, what was the back and forth like?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, because Nick Sirianni would only override Kellen Moore if he has the authorization to do so. Let's be real. He can't do it if he's, otherwise he'd just get fired. So they obviously authorized him. I'd be curious to know, did they want him not to be able to override the offense coordinator? And then he says, guys, I'm not in for that. Like, Doug was like, I'm not in for you guys telling me who my coaches are.
I mean, has Nick ever drawn the line and said,
we don't know.
No way, guys. I'm not going to lower myself to that point.
I tend to think it didn't come to that, John. I tend to think Lurie and Howie I tend to think they're just allowing him without that back and forth, because
way he's saying it publicly if he didn't get the okay from above. There's no way.
And listen, let me put it this way. If he wasn't allowed to override the offensive coordinator, I would think he would be the only head coach in football not allowed to override the offensive coordinator.
Well, that's what he's qualified to do.
All right, Tom, give me a great answer here. A notable fictional royal.
Okay, so just keep in mind the prize when I give you this answer. Mm-hmm. How about the King of Hearts?
King of Hearts.
Kevin Hart.
I gotcha.
See what you did there.
King of Hearts. I think the Queen of Hearts is better, but fair enough.